Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's call. I would just like to take this opportunity to mention that the thoughts of everyone at Global Ports is with those people directly impacted by the virus and the healthcare workers around the world who are risking their own lives to help save others. I hope and I wish that is a big lesson for all of us and the humanity on whom to attach more importance after our families. Clearly how we performed in 2019 and how well we delivered in terms of new ports has very quickly been overshadowed by the COVID-19 outbreak that has impacted every aspect of daily lives of billions of people around the world. The outbreak has impacted the cruise industry in a way no other crisis has before, whether it's SARS, the Gulf Wars, terror attacks, or the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009. However, while there remains a significant amount of uncertainty on how and when normality will return and what that normality will look like, history has shown that cruise performs very well, especially when it comes to managing through a crisis and most importantly, when coming out of a crisis. Cruise lines, while facing significant financial pressures, have recently accessed significant amounts of liquidity to help them manage through this crisis. And looking into the future, they are looking into the future with much more confidence. The short-term outlook might be uncertain, but I strongly believe that the long-term outlook for the industry remains positive. The cruise product is a unique offer, and with better health safety measures in place, it will once again become the preferred choice of vacationers. And those health safety measures, there's already discussion within the industry, especially on their ventilation system. GPH remains a unique company in this industry with a high level of intrinsic value within its portfolio of long-term concessions at what are some of the world's marquee cruise ports like Barcelona, Singapore, Nassau. And perhaps most importantly in these troubled times, our concessions are highly cash generative with high EBITDA margins and with inherently flexible business models, which means a significant portion of our costs in both cruise and commercial rise and fall with volumes. Clearly, the current crisis has meant we have had to take action to reduce costs and protect the balance sheet, and I would like to run through the key actions that we have taken, and while how the situation unfolds from here is uncertain, I would also like to share some details on how we believe the business will fare under a severe scenario for the next 12 months. On slide one, as I just mentioned, GPH has inherently a very flexible business model. We have not had to really highlight or discuss this before, but we have built this company and run this company in such a way that a significant proportion of our cost rise and falls with volumes. The flexibility comes through things like the extensive use of outsourced providers of security, luggage, handling, and stevedoring with day-to-day flexibility based on the traffic, as well as things like per pax payments with port authorities or local governments. The board and senior management in recent weeks carried out a detailed and thorough analysis of all our costs. As a result, we have acted very quickly, put in place already agreed measures to reduce non-volume related costs by $11 million per annum. These cost savings include things like all board members agreeing to waive their salaries and or fees through year-end, reduced marketing costs and consultancy fees, and salary deferral costs across the group. These salary deferrals are now focused on the cruise operations and head office and are weighted towards those at the higher end of the pay scale. So we've been trying to be very, very fair in our approach. Our commercial operations continue to trade well and basically in line, pretty close to in line with our budget. But they also focus on keeping costs under control, and all new cost generating activities have been suspended. In addition, we have suspended all project expenses related to new projects. To put this into action into some context, in 2019, we had spent $5.1 million on project expenses across the business. Now, related to those project expenses, that doesn't necessarily mean that we have not or we are not proceeding with further acquisition potentials. But what we're doing is we're trying to sign exclusive agreements with ports which are interested to team up with us for deals to happen in 2021 and onwards. We have also reviewed all our CapEx plans across the business, and as a result, we have suspended all but essential maintenance CapEx across the majority of our cruise and commercial portfolio. In terms of our new ports, it's important to note that the planned CapEx in Antigua and Nassau remains unaffected by this decision. In Antigua, the group's cash investment as equity was paid from the group's cash resources in 2019, and the balance of the required investment is being funded through an already committed bank loan from a syndicate of lenders. In Nassau, the construction work has commenced as of last week, with an expected completion date of April 2022. With the scheduled CapEx over the next 12 months of up to $130 million, which is being fully financed by a bond issuance in both local and international markets, and the demand probably will be much higher than the 130 to be issued by mid-May. Despite the current uncertainty, Nassau Cruise Ports bond issues into the local and international markets is on schedule and most probably will be oversubscribed. In addition to these savings, a number of our ports have fixed minimum concession fee. We are in active discussion with the relevant authorities on this, and so far we expect deferrals amounting to $2.6 million per annum compared to a total cost of $7 million until such time as the cruise industry starts back up again. It is important to note that we remain in active and positive talks on further deferrals with all relevant authorities. As we stated in our trading statement on March 11, in light of the unprecedented level of disruption to global trade and the cruise industry, and the associated short-term uncertainty, the board of GPH decided that until the situation becomes clearer, it is prudent and in the best interest of all stakeholders to temporarily suspend the dividend for the full year of 2019. While clearly such an action is regrettable, I think all investors can understand why this decision has been made. In terms of other financial liabilities, we believe that we have the cash resources to pay all interest and repayments over the next 12 months and longer, even under a severe downturn scenario that I will outline shortly. As you'll be aware, governments around the world have announced a wide range of facilities and measures to provide support to companies and employees, including our origin in UK for mid-sized companies. We believe that our operations will qualify for support in a number of countries, and we intend to apply and have already applied for support where appropriate and applicable. However, until such time as support is secured and agreed, we will not assume any benefit from such facilities and measures in any of our plans. In recent weeks, as well as taking immediate action to reduce costs, the board senior management, in conjunction with our auditors, have been working hard on a number of downside scenarios. While these scenarios have a range of outcomes, we thought that given the current uncertainty around COVID-19, coronavirus, that it was best if we shared with you some of our central assumptions and outcomes of our several severe downside scenarios. The most important outcome being that despite the very severe assumptions, which I hope the industry will not develop like that, 12 months from now, at the end of April 2021 and longer, we believe that the group will have sufficient cash resources to remain in operation and within the covenant requirements. Now, our downside scenario assumes the following, and really this is the worst case scenario. Zero cruise passenger at Caribbean ports through the end of 2020, January, April 21, 50% of our budget, keeping in mind that we are used to 104 to 110% occupancy in each ship. Zero cruise passenger at all other ports until the end of 2021, which basically means, with the exception of the Caribbean, that cruise traffic around the world will stop till the end of April 21. Port Acton's container volume down by 35% versus 2019 to end of December 2020, and 25% below budget until the end of 2021. Then in terms of cost, the flexibility in our cost base really comes to the fore, with volume-related cost savings of approximately $18.8 million. In addition, there is of course the $11 million cost saving from non-volume related costs that I mentioned earlier. However, we have already put in place measures that under the severe downside scenario will generate an additional $1.1 million of savings, so for a total of 12.1. This scenario assumes we pay all interest and capital repayment obligations as they fall due. In addition, we continue to assume no support from any government facilities under the scenario. The outcome of this severe downside scenario is that where waivers have not already been agreed, the loan covenants are either not breached or loans are repaid. However, under this severe downside scenario, gross debt to EBITDA will rise above the Eurobond's 5x incurrence covenant. This covenant is only tested if there's a new acquisition or an asset sale. The primary implication of a breach is that dividends from global demand will be restricted until such times as the leverage falls back below 5x. I think it will be hard for anyone to argue that the volume assumptions in this scenario are not severe, while our cost saving as cash saving measures are very significant. These are based on either lower volumes or already agreed measures. Under this scenario, the board believes that the group will have sufficient cash resources to remain in operation. This is before we consider the wide number of additional opportunities that are available to improve our cash and liquidity positions still further, such as government support, suspension or deferral of additional fixed minimum concession fee, and any further action we could take to reduce cost. To sum up, the world is a very different place to what it was just a matter of weeks ago. However, I personally strongly believe that the cruise industry will bounce back from this crisis stronger than before, and that consumer demand for cruise holidays, while dented in the short term, will remain undiminished in the medium to long term. In the meantime, we are, as usual, well positioned to ride out this storm and perfectly poised to benefit when cruise ships start sailing again. Now I'll hand over to my dear friend Emre, who is going to talk a little about 2019.
Thank you very much, Mehmet Bey. Martin, can you check that everyone hears me?
We can hear you clear.
Okay, great. Well, I mean, Mehmet Bey explained it very well, I think, the situation we're in today and our belief in the future. I assume there's not a lot of interest in 2019 results under these circumstances, but please bear with me for a couple of minutes, because I think we need to understand the past to connect to the future. 2019 was an inflection point for the company. We grew the cruise business both organically and inorganically. The cruise EBITDA grew 20% in constant dollars after finally getting 25 and 30-year concessions in two more critical ports in the Caribbean and in the Bahamas region. In 2019, cruise revenues surpassed commercial revenues for the first time in the history of the company. And this is something that we've been talking about ever since the IPO in 2017. However, the trade wars between China and the US hit our marble volumes, which negated the positive story on the cruise side. And this resulted in a 3% decline in consolidated revenues. This all happened in 2019. And 2020, as a result of this, was poised to become a great year, as the first quarter actually shows us. And a complete reversal of the roles. So I'm talking about 60% of the business coming from the cruise side and 40% coming from the commercial side. In fact, That is one reason why we kicked off the strategic review process, which is still ongoing. And we're looking at closing that in the third quarter. Now, coming to the new ports, new investments, actually now is time to talk about the future, I think. You know, when you look at the future, I know it's hard to imagine right now, but this period will pass and the ports will once again be visited by cruise ships. Cruise guests have one of the highest purchase rates that I have seen in my life, and I worked in many different industries. The repurchase rate in this industry is around 50 to 60%. And this group is extremely loyal and they love the product. So I believe deep in my heart that cruising will be back. But yeah, maybe just like after 9/11, the security measures changing after 9/11, just like that, the health and safety measures will probably change forever. And we will have to adjust in our ports and the ships will have to adjust for new processes. When this happens though, these ports that we added to the lineup of GPH with their incredible destinations outside our gates will become very important. This picture that you're seeing right now, I think, if we switch to the next page, Martin. Right, so this picture is actually Antigua. And it's a real photograph. Only this huge ship, the mega ship you see on the new pier at the far end of the picture is actually what it will look like when we finish the investment of this pier. And this construction is actually going on right now as we speak. If we go over to the next slide, we'll be seeing Nassau. This is a glimpse of the project. So this is not the real picture, obviously, but we're still working on the project and on the planning. We're almost done here. And this 4 million passenger port will be transformed into a marquee port, into an incredible destination. And this project is also going to be under construction in the next year and will be finished in 2022, according to our estimations. And we have two more ports to report for 2019. And both of these ports are, again, incredible and unique destinations. La Goulette in Tunisia has been a close to 1 million passenger port in the past. Moreover, it's very important for West and Mid-Mediterranean itineraries, non-EU itineraries, and the biggest customer of this port happens to be our partner here. So I have great faith in the future of this port, but you know, this will probably kick in at a later stage than the first two ports I'm talking about. And Halong Bay. I don't know if any of you have been there, but it's a magical place. It's well positioned for Southeast Asia. And the numbers were going great well before the crisis. And we have a management agreement there. So we have no investment and no risk, but we have an upside. And I believe when Asia is back, Halong Bay together with Singapore will be very popular again. So I want to keep it short. This is how we look at today and how we look at the future. I believe our feet need to be firmly on the ground in a situation like this. And we need to be, and we are doing our best to mitigate the risks of this unprecedented crisis that we're having right now. But our head needs to be up in the clouds and we need to be able to see the future as well. And I have all the belief in the world that GPH will come out of this crisis intact and poised for growth and you know, with all its strength and its network once this period is over. So with that, I want to give it back to Martin to start the Q&A session so that we as a team can answer your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Emre. So obviously new technology for everybody in these unusual times. If you could try to use the raise your hand functionality on Zoom, I'll be able to pick up the fact you want to ask a question. I will then in turn open up your line so you can ask your question to the management team. As a reminder, please, we won't be taking questions from people who have not fully identified themselves, but if you could use the hold raise my hand functionality, I will open up to questions. If not, you can send me in the group chat message. You can send me a private message and again, I will try and open up to you. We will now give sort of 10 or 15 seconds for people to register that they want to ask questions.
Martin, I think for some people, the raise hand function can be under reactions at the menu below. Reactions.
Okay, thanks, Emre. Okay, first question comes from Owen Reid at Berenberg. Owen, I'll unmute your line and please go ahead.
Hi, yeah, thanks, Martin. Can you hear me all right?
We can, yes. And all questions, sorry, I should have said, Emre will take the questions and direct them appropriately depending on the content.
Sure. Yeah, just a few from me. So firstly, I guess you've kind of given the downside scenario up to April 2021. I was thinking what you think about for summer 2021, how quickly, if that downside scenario plays out or some sort of downside scenario plays out, how quickly does that return to normal? Secondly, are you having any conversation with cruise line operators about the port fees you'll be charging going forward, given that they'll be under pressure? Are they looking for sort of cost relief there? And then lastly, I think there are a number of Marble trade fairs that are linked to sort of the demand that comes out of Antalya. Is there any guidance you can give on or color you can give on, are those fairs still going ahead? And how do you see that sort of the volume trajectory? Is it gone back to normal or is there any softness that you expect? Thanks.
Thank you, Owen. So the first question about the downside side scenario, since Mehmet Bey, you explained this part, would you like to take it first and then we can go into detail if you want us to? So I believe the question was about the summer.
Yeah, just when, what do you think will happen in summer 21? Do you see a normalization of the market or is it a gradual return and kind of we won't be back to 2019 levels until 2022?
Let me answer. The scenario that we run basically is zero cruise passenger, as I mentioned, at Caribbean ports through end of 2020. January, April, only 50%. Zero cruise passenger at all other ports until the end of April 2021. And the container volumes, as mentioned, 35% down versus 2019 through end 2020. And 25% below budget until end 2021. Now, referring to 2021 summer months, we have heard from the market, talking to the ship owners, like cruise line executives, and some other data sources that Mediterranean is picking up faster for next summer compared to the Caribbean. Will the numbers match in 2021 summer months, 2019? Absolutely not. Will they be to in 2020 the levels of 2019? I don't think so either. So the earliest time we will see 19 numbers back will probably be 2023. I hope that answers. I have talked to all three CEOs of all three cruise lines. At this stage, their cancellation rates, or rather than mentioning cancellation, 68% on average of the cruise cancellations are taking another cruise for a year, 12 to 18 months down the road, which is a good sign. only about 30%+ are asking for cash refund. So that's a good sign. The other thing is the summer months for the Mediterranean is 35% compared to the Caribbean increase. So that's another good sign as well. On the container, the marble trades and things like that, of course, those things didn't happen because they were in, I believe, February and April. But the feedback we're getting from importers in China or the people, I mean, they've been very, very innovative, to be frank, because they need to mark every single block marble before it gets shipped. Now, they're doing all those things via Zoom. They block the marbles are being blocked, seen by the Chinese importers on the Zoom, and they're marking them accordingly. Whether the traffic in the container side marble will go back to 19 or 18 numbers, it's very difficult to answer that question. I don't think I can or anybody can. But certainly if China grows according to World Bank 9%+ in 2021, of course, that will have an impact on marble's export from here as well. Did you have one more question, or that was it, Egan?
Yes, Mehmet.
Yeah, there's just...
Let me answer that, because it was referring to the port fees.
Exactly.
We have, I think we are one of the few companies which has experience with this due to what happened in the East Mediterranean in the past. And what we see from our experiences, the port fees, first of all, are a relatively small part of their cost structure. So, and they are in terms of tariffs. So tariffs set by governments. And I do not think that will be the first priority for the cruise lines. What might happen, as it happened in Eastern Med, is if and when governments want to attract more cruise lines, then they have incentives. And these incentives are basically given to the cruise lines either directly or through their agents. So that is our expectation. We do not expect a huge pressure on our port fees. Our focus mostly is on traffic, on trying to see when the traffic comes back. That's the first focus. The second focus is adjusting ourselves to the situation, because I surely think that we will have to work with the cruise lines and with the governments to ensure improved health safety measures and you know, adjust our operations accordingly. And we're actually working on that as we speak right now. And those actually may result in us providing extra services with extra fees, in fact, in the future, because it will be quite... quite involved, these procedures. You know, I'm talking about possibly, measuring the temperature of every single passenger, maybe doing some tests, distributing masks, quarantine rooms, etc., etc. So we'll have to look at the passenger flows completely anew after the crisis period. So I believe that answers all three questions right now.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you.
Thanks, Owen. And the next questions come from Greg Johnson from Shore Capital. If you could unmute your line, go ahead, Greg. Thank you.
Yep. Afternoon, all. Just a couple of quick questions, please. Firstly, what is the likely timing will be on the completion of Port Agdenes? And secondly, very helpful trends in terms of the scenario analysis on sort of commercial side of marble. Could you give any granularity on sort of trading on other lines, such as cement at the moment?
Can you answer the first question? I can maybe answer the second.
What was the first question? Remind me.
The closing of the Actin.
Sorry. The deadline for the deadline for signing definitive sale and purchase agreements is 12th or 15th of June. We'll know by then. But so far, so good, knock the wood. It's proceeding okay. Now, the next question.
It's Balkan. I mean, it's cement, basically. I can answer that if you want to, please go ahead. Cement.
No, very quickly, I can say one word. I mean, we budgeted certain numbers for bulk and general cargo. And I do believe, and Martin, correct me if I'm wrong, we are way over our budget numbers. I think the loss in containers somehow is being made by general and bulk cargo. One important factor, for one reason or the other, most countries around the world are either banning or putting quotas on grain imports or exports, for that matter, exports. And Turkey decided to import massive amounts of grain from various countries which still do export. So Antalya will be a crucial hub for that grain importation as well. I don't know whether Emre Bey, you want to add anything.
Just one clarification. I mean, most people know this already, probably, but when Mehmet Bey was talking about bulk and general cargo, the driver in that category is cement. So he was actually, you know, answering the cement question. Yes, the cement is going considerably well this year, where it, you know, it almost gave us a heart attack last year. But this year the numbers are looking up, and we're making progress due to certain actions that we have taken in Port Akdeniz.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Greg. Okay, and the next question comes from Melwin at Sterling IM. Please unmute your line and go ahead, Melwin.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great.
Well, first of all, Martin, thank you very much for sending in the conference details at short notice. Appreciate it. My question to Mehmet or Emre, whoever can answer it really, is could you just outline our current total debt borrowing position and what is the timeline in terms of paying it down and the conditions, covenants, etc., please? Thank you.
Mehmet Bey?
I don't have the table in front of me. I
thought so. I'm actually going to give the word to our CFO right now, Ferda, to answer this question. So our debt position and all that, I think it's better if Ferda answers.
Thank you.
Ferda, you have to unmute if you can hear me.
I think there's something wrong with your line.
Can you hear me right now?
Yes, we can hear you, but can you speak up or turn up the volume?
Okay.
Yes, much better
Is
now.
It okay?
Yes.
A bit more.
A bit more, maybe, yeah.
Okay. Can you hear me right now? Hello?
Marilyn, can you hear her?
No.
Ferda, you need to speak up a little bit more.
Okay.
Emre, you're very clear, but she's not.
Hello? Right yes. now?
Yeah, it's better, but I think, okay, fine, go ahead. I'll squeeze my ears.
Okay. At the considering the year end number, gross debt to EBITDA, our gross debt of 483 million US dollar.
Yes.
But you should consider that there's some accounting application related with the IFRS 16 numbers, so yes. IFRS 16 applications. So there was an additional 65 million gross debt impact in our financials. So like for life compensation, you should consider that 388.2 million US dollar. Net debt to EBITDA, net debt to EBITDA, $389 million. Like for like, $324.3 million. Like for like, net debt to EBITDA 4.2 times. Cash conversion rate of the company this year 68%, because of the capex, additional capex for the new acquisitions. And then sure. For the Eurobond calculation, as Mehmet Bey mentioned earlier, there is no covenant breach for the Eurobond calculation, because Eurobond calculation based on the restricted group's performance. If there's some additional acquisition for the restricted group, or one of the subsidiaries subsidiary sales from the restricted group for the dividend Eurobond covenants. So there is no...
Arda, I think the question was also referring to the down payment for the debt this year. Correct, Marilyn, is that...
You're absolutely right. And the timeline, really, because obviously...
Let me sum
you
up.
You may not decide to pay down the debt, but there will be some partials coming for renewals and things like that.
Let me sum up very briefly. If you look to your screen, the 2020 payments are 36.2. All of them are revolving lines. Mostly they are on Port Akdeniz.
Sure.
Then you have 2021, which is including the Eurobond, and you see going through the years. Okay?
Yes.
So the Eurobond has to be refinanced or in one way or the other, unless we sell Port Akdeniz. If the sale concludes, the Eurobond doesn't have to be refinanced even. So this table shows basically the debt payments per year.
Yeah.
And the worst case scenario I mentioned, basically considers some partial payment on the debt for 2020, as well as some rollover.
Sure. And this,
does that answer your question?
Thanks for that. And this 295.3, is it one debt instrument or is it several?
No, it's 250 million euro bond, and the remaining is between Barcelona, Antalya, all the other ports, including Nassau, whatever we drew so far.
Fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, acquisitions.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Martin, next.
Thank you, Melvin. And next question comes from Safir from JP Morgan. Please unmute your line and go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call. Just a question on the, a follow-up question to the previous question with respect to the Eurobond repayment. You'd mentioned that in the event Antalya is sold, you may not have to do a refinance transaction for the Eurobond. Should we assume that the proceeds from the sale should be at least equal to the size?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so in
that is a wrong assumption that I can tell you.
Got it. And so, in the event the proceeds are, I guess, less than the amount of the Eurobond, I guess, would you be looking to refinance any remainder?
Probably we will refinance, but not in a structured international where we have to pay lawyers and investment banks millions and millions of dollars. It'll be more a plain vanilla process.
Got it. And the 36.2 million, the 36 million, which is the RCF at the Akdeniz level, do you expect that?
Not all of them. Some of them probably is Barcelona and others. Those are all revolving lines, so they don't need to be paid. But we're going to pay some of it.
Got it. And these revolving lines, I guess, there's no hard maturity. They can be extended.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely correct.
Right. And then just a couple of small follow-up questions. The at the global Lehman level, which is the bond issuing entity, can you tell us what the cash level is at that entity?
Well, I never look like that. I always look to consolidated and free usable cash. So I don't know the answer. I'm going to refer to the finance team.
Got it. And maybe one more while I guess looking into it. So you'd mentioned that the debt to EBITDA as per the bond covenant at the end of last year was 4.65. Is that measured only once a year or is this on a quarterly basis?
And this question also I'll refer to Jan.
And if it's on a quarterly basis, can you tell us what the leverage number is at the end of the first quarter?
I'll refer both to Jan, but again, this is not it's an incurrence covenant. It only stops us paying dividend and or not acquiring any ports under global demand. It certainly doesn't stop us acquiring ports under the PLC.
Got it. I mean, I guess I was wondering if you're already at the five level then.
I don't know. I'm going to leave that to Jan or the finance team. Jan, the covenant, is it quarterly, semi-annual? That's the first question. And the second question, to you or the finance team, have we gone through the five times already by the end of first quarter?
The covenant is reported on a quarterly level and tested upon incurrence as an incurrence covenant. I don't think we have Q1 numbers ready as of now, but I'll leave the other questions to you, Fedor, please, if you... But I think we will report within the deadline those covenants as of Q1 2020.
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, Jan, I think you were referring to the gross debt to EBITDA ratio. You asked Farda, let me just answer that number like for like, and in fact we do not have to use IFRS 16 for that calculation, is 4.8 times.
So it didn't go through the five times covenant by the end of first quarter, which doesn't surprise me because
Not yet, Mehmet Bey. No, we're not.
That doesn't surprise me because the cruise business for the first quarter was kind of in line or even maybe a bit better than the budget. And the container was probably like $1 million or $2 million less than the budget. So it doesn't surprise me we didn't go through the covenant, but we definitely go through it by the second quarter.
Correct. I just want to repeat what I said again to prevent a misunderstanding. According to our agreement for the Eurobond, the calculations remain as is, even though there may be changes to the accounting rules such as IFRS 16. So we're not taking IFRS 16 into account for the Eurobond when we make our calculations. That has been the part of the agreement.
All right, thank you. This was very helpful.
You're welcome.
Okay, I have some questions in the chat box from somebody who's unable to access the microphone. I'll just read them out. So could you please comment on the refinancing plans for the Eurobond? It comes due November 21. Are we talking about an amend and extend or a fully fledged restructuring? Also, is a rights issue an option to facilitate the refinancing?
Jan? Can you answer this? Or Mehmet Bey, do you want to answer it?
Well, let me say a few words and then Jan can continue. Again, as we mentioned, it all depends on the sale of Antalya, which the deadline I think is June 15, if I'm not wrong, of this year. So it all depends on that. On the restructuring of the Eurobond and things like that, I'll pass that to Jan. But certainly, every potential or possible scenarios are being considered by the board. Jan, do you want to add a few words?
Yeah, happy to. Of course, Antalya's sales process is a key driver, but we're not relying on this. I think, let me say first, and we discussed this over the last couple of calls, I think with debt maturities out as far as 18 months, we're certainly not in a comfortable position, but it is still 18 months to go. So the current trajectory of the cruise industry is uncertain, and that impacts refinancing options. But we do expect, as it was said in the first part of the call, that the cruise industry fundamentals will prevail eventually, and cater for a better refinancing environment. In normal circumstances, we would have by the time now probably reported on very detailed plans, if not already gone through final agreements on a refinancing option, which was targeted, as we stated before, to be completed in 2020. And those options, those refinancing options, against the fundamentals of long-term concessions and infrastructure characteristics will prevail. And hence we believe in an orderly refinancing opportunity for this bond, with or without Actinis. And in the meantime, as Mehmet explained, we will exploring all options and will, it is a couple of weeks only that the situation prevails as it currently does. And we will then report once there is further clarity on those options, but we're looking at all options for the Eurobond.
Thank you, Jan. Obviously, the investor can't ask any follow-ups. Maybe that's a good thing, depending on what the next questions I'm about to read out. Finally, could you please confirm what you're seeing year to date on the commercial side versus 35% traffic reduction assumption in the downside scenario?
I mean, I can answer that very shortly. That scenario is pessimistic, according to what we're seeing. In fact, in the first quarter, we have made our plans, and it was in line with our expectations. So that assumption is definitely pessimistic. But again, it was a pessimistic scenario.
Martin, because these are difficult times for everybody, it might be a good idea, assuming legally we are allowed to, the numbers that has been forwarded to you through end of April, March, whatever, it would be good if you release them. Forecasted end of April, assuming legally we can.
Yeah, I think that might be a little bit hard, but it's not long until the Q1 results in a few weeks' time. I think also I would just highlight that it's tucked in the back of the 60-odd pages of the RNS, but in terms of versus budget, this downside scenario assumes a fall in marble exports from April to September 2020 of 75% based on the management forecasts. Before that then moderates to carry on at 25% below original forecasts. So while we've put 35% to give some context, because you don't know management expectations, that gives you an idea of how severe the assumption is versus management's expectation for the year. Next question, could you please give us some more color on how large a percentage of your costs in cruise and commercial are fixed versus variable?
Sure. In fact, we have those numbers. Farda, can you give us the numbers? Martin, can you repeat the question for Farda, please?
Yes. So could you please give us more color on how large percentage of your costs in both cruise and commercial are fixed versus variable?
Ferda, don't forget you have to unmute.
Okay, well, we're waiting.
Okay, are you hearing me right now?
Yes.
Yes. Uh, Considering the our portfolio, I can say that most of the cost item related directly related with the volume, passenger both passenger volume and the cargo volume. So approximately 60% of our total cost fixed cost. It means that it is directly related with the passenger numbers or the cargo volumes.
No, variable cost, not fixed cost, variable.
Variable cost. And rest of it, approximately 32% of it fixed cost. The percentage same as the both commercial and the cruise side, cruise segments. I can say that 70% of the our cost is fixed cost.
Variable.
Sorry for that, variable.
So basically on the commercial side, it's around 60%+ variable. And on the cruise side, it's about 70% variable.
Okay, thank you. How large is the maintenance capex for this year?
This year we postponed all the maintenance capex, by the way. It was budgeted as a approximately $12 million, but all of them postponed or suspend. Q1 realization rate approximately $2 million, and the rest of it will be was suspended.
So $2 million is the total maintenance cost for 2020, which has already been spent.
Yes.
Thank you. And we have one more call at the moment, Rain from Avron. Rain, if you could unmute your line and please ask your question. Thank you.
Hi, hello. I would have two questions. One of the earlier slides you provided, the worst case scenario, and the conclusion was that there would be enough liquidity to stay afloat until April 2021. But could you please give some kind of indication what would be the impact on the equity in such scenario? And my second question is on the Aktenitz sale. So could you maybe kind of elaborate a little bit in what stage the discussions currently are, or about what the main focus currently is the kind of potential buyer doing the due diligence, or are you kind of negotiating over the price, or maybe kind of are you expecting some clarity on the potential concession extension, or I don't know, kind of if you can give some kind of color where the kind of a focus currently is.
Let me start by Antalya, because I'm following that very closely. We have signed an exclusive, offer. It's subject to their board approval, as well as ours. Due diligence is finished. There's some final questions which are being answered, mostly legal, but there's a simple condition precedent. The price is not subject to negotiation, but they, because of what's happening around the world, they can always amend their price. They have that flexibility. But also, we can always walk out if they amend their price. So that's Aktenitz, i.e. due diligence is finished. Few very minor legal questions, which has been answered. Signing set for the exclusive period. Sorry, not signing. Exclusive period ends on 15th of June. And there's one single condition precedent, which has nothing to do with extension of the term. And yeah, that's Antalya. Now, on the first question, what was the question? Sorry again, I didn't get note.
Well, basically, the impact on equity in the worst case scenario. You
know what? Okay, first I said April 2021 or longer. The reason April date was selected, auditors, as you might know, require 12 months ahead. They don't look longer. So that's what we did. It goes beyond April, by the way. Now, I don't know what you mean by equity. I didn't understand that. I'm going to refer that to Martin or Young. Impact on equity, I don't know what it means.
So basically, maybe I'll kind of explain what I meant. That I mean, you do have kind of enough liquidity, but I would presume that your costs would still be kind of higher than your income, which means kind of you would be burning equity. So just to kind of understand how much equity you would lose throughout this period.
Yeah, do you want to answer that question again? I'm sorry, I didn't understand because I'm a cash guy. I look cash in, cash out. I don't look to the equity side. I guess the simple answer to that question is the total cost related to the cruise side of human resources. That's the simplest answer. And assuming that the variable cost total for the cruise side is in the region of 25-30, we already cut 12 approximately, so 13 million, ballpark number, and Çınar Bey, if he's on the line, can correct me, is the maximum equity that we will be eating, assuming we don't take any further steps like we did just a few weeks ago. And that we're gonna decide basically by June.
Mehmet Bey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
If I may, I guess this is much more, let's say, technical question related to the financial statements. So just to clarify, we had, as of year end 2018, we had $61 million of retained earnings, positive retained earnings on our consolidated financials. And what we will see on our financials with these, let's say, with no operations in financials, we had $45 million of depreciation, at least, which is not, let's say, feasible. But at the end of the day, at the end of 2020, we did not expect or we did not forecast, even under the worst case scenario, we did not forecast any negative retained earnings accumulated.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you.
I mean, again, to answer, I don't know who asked the question, but to answer, it's really the business model. The business model is such a flexible model because 70% of the cruise side is basically variable. Hence, you can cut it down. If there's no traffic in 2021, you behave accordingly. So that's not the issue, really. Martin?
Yes, thank you, Mehmet. I will allow sort of 10 or 15 seconds for anybody that has not registered to ask a question to go ahead and do so. Otherwise, we will draw the call to a close.
I want to say one more word before we close.
There is one more question coming. It's being typed at the moment. Could you please clarify, if you have zero revenue, how much the business would burn each month pre-interest? And how much bottom line level loss do you expect in 2020?
Çınar Bey should answer this question.
So even under the doomsday scenario, please note that we forecast, we assume that only cruise operations will create zero revenue. But on the other hand, our commercial operations, although it's not forecasted fully to continue its operations, but even under the doomsday scenario, it will be an amount of, let's say, significant amount of revenue stream. At least under those circumstances, it will be significant. And even under the worst doomsday scenario, or whatever we name it, under that scenario, we did not foresee any loss more than $45 million for the full year.
And the part of the question was, what's your cash burn on the cruise side monthly?
I guess Emre Bey can comment on this, but...
Well, I mean, we do not have a cruise-only cash burn because of because of our headquarter costs catering to the totality of the business. But our cash burn number is, I believe, in that scenario, around $2.5 million.
That's correct.
That's including the commercial.
Yes. I mean, if you were to take out commercial, it would be probably 70% of that amount or something like that. But we really never look at it that way. It doesn't, it doesn't mean anything really.
Thank you. And I think so. I would just add, it's also important to remember, you know, the scenario we're talking about here is not management expectation. It's not a management forecast. This is a severe downside scenario that has been worked on and has been, as you will see when the annual report comes out in a couple of days, looked at in great detail. But this is a severe downside scenario, which is why we're talking about it, to give comfort on the outlook for the business. This is not a central case or a base case scenario that the GPH board and senior management are planning for. And on top of that, as mentioned by both Mehmet and Emre, there is a significant amount of other measures that can and will be taken if that severe downside scenario actually starts to play out in reality. I will now pass over to Mehmet for closing remarks. Thank you.
Well, first and foremost, just a reminder who are or which group of people are more relevant to us, including myself, that we should respect, honor, and cherish the health workers around the world. I hope and I wish really that this has been a big lesson to humanity. We as Global Ports are supporting the health workers across our spectrum in every country, going as far as, and Turkey being the only one from the countries that we cover, sending masks, basic health items like gloves, masks to various countries from Spain to Italy to UK. And we're trying to send a batch to Bahamas as well as the countries we operate like Antigua. So that's being said, we are also very lucky. We have a very, very flexible cost base, which is mostly variable. I think the burn rate monthly probably should be no more than a couple hundred thousand, i.e. 750,000 at max. But whoever asked that question, Martin, we should get back to that. So even if the cruise industry shuts down all the way to 2021, we are okay. Put safe for the Eurobond refinancing. Having said that, I'd like to thank everybody who joined us. We're a small company, therefore our troubles are relatively small to take care of. Martin, do you want to add anything, or Emre Bey?
No, Emre, we're fine. Thank you.
Martin? Thank you. No, that's great. Thank you very much, Mehmet. Thank you, everybody, for calling. If you have any other follow-up questions, then please give me a call or drop me an email. Thank you very much.